official from the department, veteran, parliamentary leader. Okay. I'm already confused. State guard, either parliamentary leader. Today we have three items. Well, very short follow-up meeting on the civil aviation bill, the minutes of the previous meeting, adoption of the consideration in actual fact of the minutes of the previous meeting, and of course the last item being the Gauteng Metro Rail disaster, whatever you may call it. But those are things that we will consider after we had dealt with the civil aviation piece. We would note that last week we got a briefing from the department. We raised a number of issues for consideration, proposed amendments, and then of course the department committed itself to go and relook at those issues, formulate responses, reformulate some issues that we strongly felt on, and of course clarify matters that needed more further and more further clarity in actual fact. So without further ado, I would then request the department to take us through the process of responding to the issues we raised last week. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning to the honourable members and other colleagues. As the Chairman rightfully pointed out, last week we met and there were a couple of issues that were identified by the honourable members that we had to go and look at and revert to this committee. I'm just going to go through them one by one and explain myself, and perhaps, Mr. Chairman, if I may pause on each item and take questions, if that's fine, Mr. Chairman. Okay. The first item was in terms of Section 133 of the bill, where the question related more to the 30 years imprisonment, whether it's a sufficient punishment for an accused who may have killed passengers as such. The department went back and looked at this issue, and our response is that in terms of this section, a person be charged with a statutory offence as laid out in Section 133. However, he may also be charged with a common law offence, and if found guilty on murder, there is no statutory limit on a punishment to be imposed because it is a common law offence. So, simply by means of examples, if he is charged for an aircraft accident and let's say there were three people on board that died, he would be charged in terms of this act, Section 133, he'll get perhaps 30 years maximum sentence depending on the judge. And he will also then have a second count where it'll be, a second charge, three counts of murder. So he could get three life sentences plus the 30 years. So it's not that it's 30 years, it's capped and he gets away with just the 30-year limitation of sentence. It can be charged common law as well as statutory law.
Okay. Maybe just to inform members, we have requested copies to be made available for all of us on the responses. So you will be given those copies, but we can continue with the verbal presentation. On that matter, or you want to make a follow-up, Mr. Musolo?
And a little addition, Chairperson, if you look at the section, it does not prescribe murder as one of the offences for disqualification purposes. Murder is a common law offence, and we've got a lot of offences that we have prescribed here, whereby those offences that we have listed in this bill, the maximum punishment for them, it will be 30 years, but for common law offence, it will be the discretion of the judge, can give more than 30 years or even less than that. Thank you.
Honorable Wilson?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. It's unfortunate we don't have copies of that. As you said, we're looking that it be a short meeting. So I suspect the copies might be here when we're already gone. I think let's not play around legal jargon here, common law, statutory, because next to that will be criminal charges and so on. Because my shallow understanding then as a lay person, you mean the person will be charged twice for the same offense, is what we're saying. Because normally you prescribe, like in the other laws and so on, you have got minimum sentences. Like, for example, you deal with domestic. You say a person will not be sentenced less than this and so on. But you don't put a maximum for whoever, whether it's a judge or a magistrate. Because why I was raising this point is that it then prohibits whatever judicial officer will be, you know, presiding over such a case and so on. I think that's the point, if we can get further clarity. It's unfortunate the committee does not have a legal advisor who should have sought legal opinion, because that's our concern we're raising from the committee side. If maybe... Thanks, Chair. I think Advocate Masumbuga mentioned the fact that murder is not listed as one of the offences in Section 133. So if, for instance, an offender commits one of these offences and then murder does not arise, then that offence will be imposed. But now if the offender commits one of these offences and then also murder arises, it means that that person will be charged in terms of this act, and will also be charged in terms of the common law. It's not being charged twice for the same offence. It'll be charged, for instance, for destroying an aircraft, and also charged for committing murder. So those are two counts. It's not being charged for the same offence twice. I'm not sure if that's clear, sir.
It's not the alternate and all those sorts of things. Okay. Are you comfortable with that? Okay. No, that's fine. Then the second issue.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chairman, we are asked to look at Section 16 LI Roman numeral 2. We were referred to the Prevention of Corruption Act 1958, the Corruption Act 1990, Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act 2004, and why we're referring to all these acts. The department's position in view on this question is that there's no problem referring to all of these acts, because we still have people in prison who have been convicted and still serving the sentences or punishment in terms of these acts. We don't want to create a legislative vacuum by not referring to all of these acts, where people may escape this vacuum and enter into the system. These are real serious offenses. Okay, so hence we refer to all of these older acts as well.
To check is, these acts have not been amended. Is it what you're saying? The 1958? 58. Check up. You know, maybe just to clarify myself. The reason why the committee raised this issue was, if, for instance, in terms of the criminal procedure whatsoever, if there's been an amendment, what then becomes the situation in an event where the person now commits a crime in under this present legal dispensation, if there is an amendment? That is why the first leg of the question would be, has it been amended? If not, then it would be understandable. Chairperson, if the act gets promulgated today, that criminal procedure gets promulgated today, and it becomes enforceable today, a person who commits an offense with effect from today, he will be charged in terms of the latest act. But a person who contravened that criminal procedure yesterday, will be charged in terms of the previous legislation, irrespective of the current act which is in existence. Yeah. So with these sections, we are addressing a situation whereby we're talking about previous convictions of a candidate who will be disqualified from becoming a member of the Aviation Safety Board. And we believe that we still have people who have been convicted in terms of the 1958 Act, in terms of the 1992 Act, and also in terms of the current Act, because we are talking about their convictions, their previous records. Yeah.
So once we apply it on the basis of the present disability, it creates a loophole for those that are doing it. Any other
question?
I'm saying the previous convictions are not I think the criminal records are being accessed and
What we are saying is we are disqualifying a person who has been convicted in terms of the 1958 Act, convicted and sentenced in terms of the 1992 Act, and also who is convicted and sentenced in terms of the 2004 Act. Yes. So it means their previous convictions in terms of this Act disqualifies them from becoming members of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board.
Okay.
Yes. I think your concern was the fact that someone who has committed an offense once he was 10 years old and now so many years have passed by and must not still be disqualified. I think that's what is one of your concerns.
Especially the minor offense. Like the example of we are having this
problem. That's why I wanted to come into that. For instance, you have this prosecutor in Gauteng. It has made headlines now for the past weeks, where this prosecutor prosecutes on the basis of the child's color. If it's an African, whether he stole a sweet or whatsoever, what he moves for instead of rehabilitation or safety centers that have been established by the Department of Social Development, she makes it a point that child is convicted and is sent to jail. Now, such cases, that I think, thanks for that, such cases, how do we respond to that? He's 10 years now, later he grows up to be a responsible young man, grows up, gets into the field of science, gets to university, qualifies, and here he is for having stolen a suit in 2009. No, really.
Chairperson, I think last time the manner you raised it, and it was the understanding of the committee that the department is going to look into that, it was to say, let's consider convictions of aviation-related offences, if I'm not mistaken. Because like the point you are raising, you then have a situation where you, like now, currently, there's been an outcry. The system we're having in the country of correctional rehabilitation. You have people who are saying we have been rehabilitated, we have repented, but still we don't find employment because those records will come to haunt you. In every form you feel, even of government departments, that was the outcry. There will be a question whether have you been convicted. It does not also ask and specify what kind of conviction. For example, you can't have a person who has been convicted for sexual offences employed to work with children, something like that. I'm trying to put it in that light. Because then if we say, if a person has had a conviction within the aviation industry, just to put it so for lack of better phrasing, I think then it can be qualified to say that person should be disqualified. But if it was something unrelated, I think like you were putting an example of a bread last time, the conviction of bread, how does it disqualify you from doing expect his work in aviation. I think that it was the spirit with which we raised it.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman, Honorable Members. I was going to move on to that next item in my response, but then I think it was preempted in terms of the issue of discussion. Page 3, we're on page 3 on the Roman numerals number 3. Okay. Now, basically, the question was, why does that section forever disqualify people who are convicted of offenses provided by the section despite having fully served the punishment or in relation to the how minor sentences may have been, for example, 3 meals of bread while you're young. Now, we are of the view that in order to preserve the integrity of the board, we do not want to appoint people who are habitual criminals with criminal records. We want to appoint people whose integrity is beyond reproach. And I think the example given with regards to a loaf of bread doesn't fit into this basket. Because as the Honorable Chairman said, it's something minor, it happened many years ago and could have been other circumstances that caused that particular offense. However, having said that, this is a general provision contained in most statutes dealing with disqualification. Now, in order to move forward and to find a way how we could look at allowing a person that may have stolen a loaf of bread 20 years ago or whatever, and they meet all the relevant criteria, it would require the South African Law Commission and the Department of Justice to come up with a general laws amendment to this particular disqualification clauses and to other similar provisions contained in other statutes. Because the difficulty we have is you can't narrow down the definition of theft when it comes to this particular section. We believe that because it's a disqualification provision and it's in a number of other statutes as well as this statute, there has to be a general laws amendment bill that could come up with a number of solutions. Either could categorize the offense and say X offense after so many years falls away in terms of your record for being appointed to a board, or alternatively, it could either make a recommendation in the section to state that by consensus or in consultation the minister, a certain person may be appointed. But it has to be a general laws bill that captures all the different statutes that we have in place that makes this disqualification applicable. Simple example, Honorable Chairman, maybe even the Companies Act as well, if you look at it, it disqualifies you from becoming a board of director for an X period of time. And if someone that's stolen a loaf of bread at the age of 12, did a BCom, became a chartered accountant, and still can't become a director, it doesn't make sense, and we agree with the Chairman on that point. But it has to be a general law amendment vote that comes to the proper process as such.
We are sure that we are not disadvantaged.
No.
The present 12-year or 8-year generation,
yes,
of South Africa,
Honourable Chairman, we deliberated upon the issue. We also looked at social issues. For example, in the old days, if you're in the school ground, you had a punch-up with someone, it was overlooked and you walked away. In today's world, parents take kids to court and you get convicted because you're 12 years old and you slap some other kid. So, you know, it's a changing world and we need to take cognizance that these are kids that it wasn't done with a serious intent, it was done at a particular age. And make provision for that at a later stage of their life.
Okay. All right. Are there any follow-ups? Or are we comfortable? Okay. Comment, maybe.
Sir, this question may be clear to me because I wasn't in the last meeting, but just for interest sake, just to take in the application form of membership thereof, does it explain or will it explain just to give guidance to the applicant, the potential applicant, to say if you have undergone rehabilitation and yes or no, then they take it from there, or it just says were you in prison for so many years, and if you say yes, it means you're just off. Does it provide that information for one to get clarity that he or she stands the same?
What? And then you respond to that. Chairperson, mine is not related to the response to something else. In the bubble, I just want clarification now. Because I wasn't here last week.
Alright. Okay. Reverend? Just received this paper, so I just wanted to
ask, well, how do I refer to this? Under, what is this? Corruption Act. One, of where it says the department view on this question is that there is no problem in referring to all this act, because we still have people in jail who have been convicted and still serving their sentences or punishment in terms of this act. We do not want to create a legislative vacuum by not referring to all this act. You know, I don't really understand what does that mean. Does it mean if we move into a new dispensation, promulgating new acts, how do we refer to the old dispensation? Unless if I don't understand quite correctly, where you say you don't want to create a vacuum.
Okay, I think the response that the department gave, Ralph, was that because of there are people who have been convicted and who might also be serving sentences as we are speaking today, it is important for them to make reference to those acts. But then as we progress and move forward, those that are someone who's serving 10 years, I would assume someone who's serving 10 years in terms of the 1958 Act. After having served his 10 years and is out now and commits another crime, would not reference, can he cannot be charged in terms of the 1958 Act, but he will now be charged in terms of the 2004 Act. So if you look at it in a progressive way, at some point or the other there will be a stop on reference to this act, because people, as we move forward, people would complete their sentences, and as those who commit will then be charged with, on the basis of the present act. So for now, reference is made in order to disqualify any vacuum that may arise as a result of not mentioning those acts. I don't know if I'm representing the issues quite well.
Okay.
Reverend Oitwena. Or get complicated.
No, I realize that they try to phase the old out by not creating a vacuum. As you're saying, at the ultimate end, they won't be referring backwards any longer.
You had something that was not relevant to you. Okay.
Chairperson, if I'm out of order, please. But I just want to refer to Clause 11 of the bill, which is the objectives of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. Now, under Section 2, they say the Aviation Safety Investigation must not appropriate blame or liability, Section 2. Now, apportion blame. Now, if you investigate the incident, then what happens, what is the role then for them? Say it's pilot error. I don't understand it. Because I say here, if you read them in Section 3, in making its finding as to the causal and contributing factors of an aircraft accident, it is not the function of the aviation to assign the fault. Now, how, if it's pilot error and you investigate the incident, so you're not allowed to say it's pilot error. You must always look for a mechanical error, because then you're not assigned blame. But if you say it's mechanical error, then you assign blame to some mechanical error. But I don't understand that. And then also section 6, where the cause of is known, the board may refuse to investigate such aircraft accidents. Now, what is in the use of this board if they can also refuse to investigate incidents? So this whole chapter, this whole section, I'm lost. I cannot understand why they not. If they can just clarify that. And just lastly, it says on the definition of an aircraft. I know this is. Does it include hot air balloons? Because they talk about aircraft. Where is it? Means any machine that can derive support, and mostly a hot air balloon hasn't got a machine. So does that exclude the hot air balloons and the zeppelins and things like that, and also gliders, which glides? They have got no machines.
No, thank you very much. I can see that members who were not present here. It's our very democratic chair. I allowed the Honorable Van Rooyen to. Because I know this is one of the issues that we raised very sharply last week around the apportioning of blame vis-a-vis an investigation. But, of course, these are different boards, the way it was presented. But I would allow the department, for the benefit of members, just to quickly remind those who were present and to take on board those who were not present last week on what are the responsibilities of each of these boards. Who investigates to prosecute, who investigates to determine technical and avoid accidents, and the other one, I can't remember its responsibilities, but these are three areas that we seeking to address in this process. Honorable Vivi, before Honorable Mkwi.
Chair, on a lighter note, I think the board might be justified to refuse. Like there was a case in Bailifan where an old grandmother is fallen off during the night of a broom because that was some kind of aviation. So in such instances, the board might refuse.
Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Yes, I think your explanation did cover my concern about the guidelines regarding the process of rehabilitation when you talk about the progressive process. But I think it's still interesting for one to have a copy of the application form and just to see the questions that are posed there for one to provide a certain information if it covers the concerns that we are raising in terms of rehabilitation processes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I was going to respond first to the Honorable Member's question regarding the application process. In terms of the Act, or the Bill Act, Section 15 covers the appointment of members and the procedure and requirements of appointing members of the Investigation Board, filling up vacancies, etc. And it's quite an extensive process in terms of it being advertised. Members are invited to apply. Then there's a panel of experts that's put together to shortlist and screen the applicants. I think what the question the Honorable Member is raising with regards to filling in the application form will fall in terms of that interview process, the panel of experts and the shortlisting. It's more a rules issue than rather than being a legislative issue. Okay, but it's a very valid point raised. Otherwise, it will be an open-ended issue and anyone who can just walk into the process and get appointed if it's not being screened properly. With regard to the second issue raised in terms of the Accident Safety Investigation Board and for those members that were here last week, I'm going to repeat myself, so please pardon me in terms of what I might have to say. The Chicago Convention, which was in 1944, resulted in a number of annexes being put out, and Annex 13 of the convention covers aircraft accident incident investigation. I have emailed this to the department office in Cape Town to circulate to the members. I'm not sure if the members have already got a copy. I did this yesterday, though. It's quite a large document, because there was a request last week for the annex. Yes, that's the document. Okay. Now, basically, the annex to the convention covers aircraft accident incident investigation. And what the objective of this annex is, it's a no-blame, no-liability provision. The intention for the International Civil Aviation Organization is to prevent a reoccurrence. So if indeed a pilot made an error, or he must come up voluntarily and say, look, I made an error, without fear of prosecution as such. However, this provision made that if a pilot has given false testimony at a later stage, he can be charged with perjury if he withheld evidence. So the annex is very clear in terms of aircraft accident, aircraft incidents to prevent a reoccurrence. It writes out a report, and the report basically gets circulated to all the other member states as well as the civil aviation authorities for the sole purpose of, one, education, and two, to ensure that corrective action can take place. And that is the purpose of this annex. The second part is in terms of where it may determine not to investigate certain aircraft accident, aircraft incidents. To investigate an aircraft accident, it's labor-intensive. It requires a large number of technical skills, as well as it requires the pooling of skills. In some instances, one might need to get, for example, an avionics engineer from another country because you don't have a special skills in this country as such, just to investigate an accident. However, there are cases where, I'll give you one, an aircraft that was in someone's farm taking off on a runway and for whatever reason hit a bump and it went into a fence. And the person says in his report, and this aircraft hit a bump on the runway and hit a fence. Now, it doesn't require the Aircraft Accident Safety Investigation Board to come and investigate the accident. They know the cause. They know the extent of the damage. And the report is made out and it's filed away. So there isn't any reason to investigate it. Flowing from that, though, there is provision made in the bill as well that the Accident Safety Aviation Safety Investigation Board is independent and it in compliance with Annex 13. However, the South African Civil Aviation Authority, which is a body set up in terms of the bill, has the jurisdiction and can investigate aircraft accident, aircraft incidents for the purposes of prosecution. So whilst you may have an investigation conducted by ASIP, on the same token, you may also have an investigation that goes in tandem by the South African Civil Aviation Authority to say, fine, we will now investigate and on our own basis formulate exactly whether it was a criminal issue and then the criminal charges. So it's not that people can get off scot-free. But as I said, there's a very clear intent for Annex 13.
Okay. Are we on the same?
Thank you. I'm not sure whether I should include the broom, but we'll proceed with it. You'll find the recreational aviation, which is your hot air balloons, your gliders and stuff are covered in terms of the regulation for South African Aviation Authority in terms of our legislation and as well around the globe. So those aircraft, those incidents will be investigated as well. You might have a hot air balloon, and while we don't want to go into the definition of machine, but it is with a particular gas mechanism that it gets up into the air as such, and it does carry passengers. So if it does crash, it will have to be investigated as an incident or an accident as such. So there's not an exclusion on that particular issue. Okay.
All right. I think that takes us then to the next point. It's question four.
Okay. Question four, Mr. Chairman, covers the view once again with regards to disqualification. And it says, we have the following view that the cutoff date for this particular disqualification, 1993, and a disqualified person is a person who was imprisoned without an option of a fine. Again, this clause is only meant to preserve the integrity of the board's members. The character of such members should be beyond reproach. This also requires a general laws amendment if the members are not happy with at this stage or at a later stage.
Any follow-up question? No follow-up questions. Then, right. Are you adding questions? No, I think so. Your concern was the fact that this is an interim constitution that's been referred to here, and why not refer to the final constitution of 1996? I think that was your concern.
Except the chairperson that switch off his cell phone.
Yeah, I am using something I don't understand, but I must confess because I've been battling with it now for the past 2 hours. Okay. Ralph?
Yeah. On this question, for if they could just clarify for me where they say the character of such board members should be beyond reproach, if they could expand a bit on that.
All right. Yeah. Thank you very much for that, because your cell phone and everything really put me off. The reference to the constitution, I remember that was the issue, because reference was made to the 1993 constitution as opposed to the 1993 interim constitution as opposed to 1996. Constitution of the Republic.
Thanks, Chairperson. That is Section 16.1J, which make reference to the interim constitution of 1993. The only issue about this 16.1J is a cut-off date. What it means is people who have been convicted prior to 1993, they are eligible for, there's some kind of amnesty given in terms of the 16.1J. People have been convicted in terms of this act prior to 1993. They are eligible for appointment as members of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. Then people who have been convicted after that, then they wouldn't be eligible for appointment as members of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board.
It's
of date that people who were convicted before 1993 are eligible for appointment, and those who are convicted after, then they are disqualified from appointment.
I understand, and at the same time, it's confusing, because on the one point, we are saying, not unless I'm confused, on the one side we are saying all those people who have been convicted in terms of the 1958 Criminal Procedure Act would be disqualified to serve on the board. But then reference is made to those who have been convicted prior to the 1993 interim constitution will automatically or qualify for amnesty. Can we bring these two together for better purpose of understanding what is it that we're talking about? Because I would not understand if I cannot be admitted because I was convicted in 1958. But at the same time, the very same act says those who were convicted prior to the 1993 interim constitution
are granted amnesty. Isn't that a contradiction?
Thanks, Chair. Here, a distinction is drawn between two acts. The one, the I, refers to Prevention of Corruption Act, right? And then J makes reference to anything that happened after commencement of the Constitution, and imprisonment for that was less than 1 year, without an option of a fine. That's where the distinction is drawn between the two. So there isn't that much of a contradiction as such.
Okay.
Distinction is drawn between Prevention of Corruption Act of 1968 and what the interim constitution makes provision for. It says there that, okay, I'll read the whole provision. A person may not be a member of the Aviation Safety Board if he or she has been sentenced after commencement of the Constitution of the Republic, 93, to a period of imprisonment of not less than 1 year without the option of a fine. So then this is what the prevention...
So, just to be with you, you could have been convicted or arrested or charged in terms of the previous act, the Prevention of Corruption, whatever act, 1950. But for so long as you did not get no option of a fine and more than a year. Okay, so the amnesty applies only for that. But if you got 2 years, 3 years, okay. No, that's fine. Are we all in the same boat? Oh, show it, I'm very slow. Okay, but so long as I'm clear. okay, but...
Actually, then if the members are okay with that, that's fine, but it's confusing to refer to the interim constitution as a constitution. Perhaps if the word interim can be inserted there, because when you refer to the Constitution of the Republic, it's the 1996 Act, not the 93 one. Chairperson, aren't we currently having the 1996 Constitution as the supreme law of the country? Because then, unless we object to that, that it's the supreme law of the country, or there is any extraordinary thing unique which we want to refer to the interim constitution, because I'd propose that we just take the 1996 Constitution. Because it was kind of largely amending the interim constitution.
No, my understanding, the way, is that in 1993 there was already an amnesty granted. Is that the correct understanding? 1993, before the adoption of the interim constitution, there was an amnesty granted for all those who were charged in terms of the Corruption Act, the Prevention of Corruption Act, but with an option of a fine and a less than 1 year sentence. There was that amnesty granted. Ne? So reference is made only to that extent, that at that point, those that were sentenced for less than 1 year with an option of a fine were then granted. But all those after that interim, because my assumption is that at that point the interim constitution was effective. It laid the basis for 1996. So its effectiveness applied to those. So you recognize them in this legislation.
Yeah, because, Chair, you know, I've been just consulting with my legal advisor here, the Honorable Adams.
Oh. No, I can see the classes as well. It's like a charge.
That we also, in the same regime, like for your members of parliament, you know, if a person has been convicted for more than a year without an option of a fine, you know, it's kind of the same thing. But it's there in the constitution, the one we have of 1996.
In terms of the Electoral Act?
No, I mean like the issue addressing here. We're speaking about a person who has been convicted for a year without an option of a fine.
Disqualified to serve as a board member.
Yeah, which is the same like for MPs or your MPLs.
Right.
But it's stated in the constitution of 1996. So why here do we want to differ? And especially just want to pick the interim constitution.
But those of parliamentarians, as far as I understand, that those convicted after 1994 of any criminal offense with no option of a fine and for more than 12 years, those are disqualified to be members of parliament as of 1994. That is what the Electoral Act would say, which draws, of course, its main basis from the Constitution of 1996. Now here is for the application to serve on the board that before 1993, as part of the operation of the board, there was an amnesty granted for those who were convicted and given a sentence of less than 12 months with an option of a fine. Now, this act recognizes that, because I would take it that if it is taken off, then it means that that amnesty would not be standing. It would mean that all those who are convicted are then automatically disqualified to serve on the board. Now, it makes the reference to that is to remind us that, hey, in 1993 we gave people amnesty. So we need to remember that we shouldn't disqualify them.
So we put the interim constitution.
Yes, it is put in there to remind us that there were people who were granted amnesty. Okay. But I will in jail because of Ungalang. It will yell because of safer stuff. The state law advisor and the parliamentary legal service, are we okay? Is our interpretation and understanding okay? You must guide us, because we don't have to find ourselves in a situation where our understanding was wrong, and therefore we agreed to something that is wrong.
I mean, my concern was the fact that, I mean, if you refer to the 93,
it must read as intact.
Yeah, that was my concern, because
okay.
The 96 one repealed the
93 one.
I don't know. Okay.
Okay, thanks. I'm not sure if I understand it as my learned friend does. I think it's cited here. It's the citation that he's worried about. But I think for the fact that it is 1993, it's clear to everybody that it was interim. And at the time, it was cited as it is cited here. It's only this 1996. The last one that has been referred to as the public of blah, blah, blah. But now if you change the citation, it means we are changing it. It was known as such then. And we all knew it was the interim constitution at the time.
The learned friend. Okay.
Yeah. Chairperson, I think we will need to just allow for some little research on so that we move at the same power, all of us. Because I'm also not sure whether the interim constitution was Act 200. Because it might be referring to the constitution of 1996. To say when we came with this clause, which constitution did we really want to refer to? And are we really having specific target of people who want to serve in the board between the period 93 and 96? Because like your explanation was saying, you will then have those people falling off to qualify in the board. It's our kind of headhunting, to put it so, going to affect people who are offenders during that period of 93 and 96. Who say they will fall off. I know we might be having some kind of shortage of skills, but will it really make a great impact? But if we so agree that we want to refer to the interim constitution, let's just make it a point that we will coin this very correctly.
Now, I think the concern on the number of the act, the Schedule 7 on, in terms of the Constitution, the repealed laws, the interim Constitution is numbered, Act number 200 of 1993, and the title is Constitution of the Republic of South Africa 1993. It's not titled. Yes, it's not titled Interim Constitution. Is titled the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa 1993. So it means that we are right. Okay. Well, that's fine then. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. All right. So that was the last point.
Can I get a clarity? You said this reference it's made precisely because of the amnesty that was given to the people that had the whatever.
Before I sound like what
can,
I'm accused
can,
of sounding
can
like
report,
the Honorable Vivi in Land and Environmental Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
I was quoting what the department was saying, and it was not me representing the department.
Can you repeat that, what you have said? Can you repeat what you have said, Chair, in relation to the amnesty?
My understanding of the reference to 1993 Constitution is limited to the fact that there were people who were granted amnesty for having committed crimes, sentenced to found guilty or sentenced to prison or whatever, convicted for less than 12 months with an option of a fine. Those people were granted amnesty.
beyond 1993, all those who were convicted do not qualify for that amnesty. But there are those, of course, who are still convicted in terms of the Prevention of Corruption Act of 1958 or 68, who got more than 1 year with no option of a fine. Those did not qualify, and they still don't qualify to be appointed as board members. That's how I understood the department to be explaining this reference to the Constitution of 1993. All right. This is a comeback. Okay. Then that brings us to the end of the responses, which then says that there are no amendments that we are being effected in this. Okay.
Yeah, sir, I don't want to delay the process, but Sir Peter, Honorable Venful is not here. He mentioned that in the definitions of air carrier, he wanted to add non-commercial to the definition of air carrier, so that to read commercial and non-commercial air transport. I'm not sure if that's covered or not.
That amendment.
Okay, thank you. Okay, if I may draw the members' attention to my apologies, ask to look at that one. Jurisdiction of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board, Section 12.1 in the bill. Okay?
Come again?
Section 12.1 in the bill, page 17. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It says, notwithstanding any other legislation, the Aviation Safety Investigation Board must, in compliance with Annex 13 to the Convention, investigate any aircraft accident and aircraft incidents for the purposes of carrying out its objects. So it captures, even if you had to go with your friend to someone that's got a small aircraft and a farm and you just go for a joyride or a joy flight.
The hydroplane, yes.
Sorry?
The hydroplane,
yes.
Okay.
It captures it.
Okay.
So it's in the act.
Oh, and go ahead. No, that's fine. Then, yes. Okay, fine. Then, honorable members, on the basis of that, before me, I will therefore proceed with the motion of desirability, which reads as follows. That in the opinion of the committee, legislation is desirable to repeal, consolidate, and amend the aviation laws giving effect to certain international aviation conventions to provide for the control and regulation of aviation within the Republic, to provide for the establishment of a South African Civil Aviation Authority with safety and security oversight functions, to provide for the establishment of an independent aviation safety investigation board in compliance with Annex 13 of the Chicago Convention, to provide for the National Aviation Security Program, to provide for additional measures directed at more effective control of the safety and security of aircraft, airports, and the like, and to provide for matters connected thereto, and that the bill referred to the committee be taken as basis. Agreed? The report, therefore, of the Select Committee on Public Services. The report of the Select Committee on Public Services on the Civil Aviation Bill, B73B 2008, as introduced in the National Assembly as Section 75, dated the 4th of February 2009, twice. The Select Committee on Public Services, having considered the subject of a civil aviation bill B73B of 2008, as introduced in the National Assembly as Section 75, refer to it, report the bill without amendments. Is there any formal mover for the adoption of the report without amendments? Reverend Marty moves for the adoption of the report. Any seconder to that? Honorable Adams, the learned friend to Honorable Vivi Van Ventford, Honorable Oliphant, and Honorable Tulas.
I will support that, provided coughing was not part of the report.
Okay. Now, thank you very much, honorable members, the department. Thank you very much. We will now proceed with the bill in terms of the next normal internal processes submitted to the House for adoption. I guess it will be a statement or submission of a report, because there's no basis for a debate on this bill. Agreed. Fine. Thank you very much, Professor. Oh, you wanted to say something?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Firstly, we'd just like to thank the Honourable Members and Mr. Chairman. This is a very important bill given our international standing in the airspace, and especially 2010. And for me, it's a relief, but I think it was also a very diligent exercise conducted over the last two sessions, which we are thankful for.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir. All right. I can't imagine that we're going to meet again for any piece of legislation. Because from here now, we also expect you to be on the ground there, doing other voluntary work. Okay. Okay, Mama. If you are still around, you are invited for lunch at Mark's building at 12:30. Okay. What is the day today? Oh, 4. Honourable members, that takes us to the second item on our agenda, which is the minutes of the previous meeting. As agreed that we are going to be considering minutes after each and every meeting. So 2 minutes for reading, and then we'll check if there are any amendments, omissions, or corrections. Any amendments, corrections, omissions to the minutes of the previous meeting?
Honorable Dulani moves for the adoption of the minutes. Is there any second?
Honorable Bertful second.
The adoption of the minutes. So therefore we'll take it that the minutes are adopted as read or presented. Then the last item on the agenda. Honorable members, we would note that sometimes last week two incidents happened in the country that has got to do with transportation of commuters in Gauteng province, Metro Rail, where we had one head-on collision, Metro Rail passenger train, and then one bad part or whatsoever they may call it, but one passenger train hit the other from behind, and a lot of people got injured in that process, which really has brought to question the safety of our commuters, or of the people who use these instruments. And we would know, for obvious reasons, these are the working class and the poor that get affected. And not only that, there are school children as well who get affected in this process. Families also get affected. We have school children, of course, who have been reported injured. We have families, women, pregnant women, some, who have been reported injured. The reports that have been coming through in the newspapers is such that there was a signaling problem that led to these two incidents. So we then, together with the whip of the committee, looked at these two incidents, agreed that we need to put to the committee that we need to have a way of going to the province, request a meeting with Metro Rail in order for them to give us a briefing on exactly what the problem was and what is it that they intend doing. Over and above these two incidents, just last week as well, if not week before last, there was another commuter train that moved or went off the rail and nearly plunged into houses near Naledi and so forth in Soweto. So in actual fact, the only thing that did not happen with that is that the train was empty. It didn't carry people at that time. Now, if it had carried people, we could have been talking now of plus other people who got injured or serious fatalities. So it becomes a problem, this thing. And if we do not react as parliament, as a caring parliament, as a people's parliament, it also questions our ability to respond to the interests and the safety of our people. So that is a proposal, Congress. Initially, the proposal was such that we should go to Gauteng tomorrow, leaving tonight in order to deal with all these issues tomorrow. But after engagement with the Gauteng committee or portfolio committee or so, the chairperson raised area of comfortability for next week, Tuesday. They can accompany us if we move today and do our work tomorrow. But if we then go to Gauteng next week, one question is that it could be too late, because we would have wanted to go and visit those who are injured, who are still hospitalized in hospitals and so forth. If time will allow also for the committee section, for the budget to be approved in time for us to at least buy get well cards for those who are still in hospital or
flowers or whatsoever, wish them well and follow up on those, perhaps even if you can visit two or three families to those who have been discharged from hospital and so forth. So that's the nature of the program that we were looking at. If we have to go tomorrow or tonight or next week, first 2 hours is that briefing session from Metro Rail, and then the next 4 or 5 hours to visit those hospitals and if we still have time, families of those who have been discharged and so forth, and maybe present a report to the council on the 19th, if not the 17th, on what the view of the committee is about the incident. That is it, honorable members, comrades. Your wisdom will guide, honorable Vivi.
Yeah, Chair, I agree with you, because we, as much as it's going to be hectic, and I know most you are concentrating on the priority legislation we have to deal with, but you also, as the vision of Parliament is a people's Parliament responsive to the needs of people, we can't be immune when certain disasters strike and so on. Like as we're saying, luckily no one died yet, and we hope those who are critical in hospital may survive. But it's also one thing which has got also kind of a bad effect to look when you look at 2010 and so on. These two train crashes happened within 10 hours in one day. It raises another question in terms of our public safety and so on. So for me, the sooner we go there, the better, because like as you are saying, by next week and so on, it might be too late and so on. But the other thing, Chair, maybe let me reserve this one for later, maybe after we formally agenda meeting, because there are other issues which I think, as much as we will be winding down Parliament, but they are very much important to be looked at. This issue of the buses, where there are some kind of pending strikes, which might also, you know, have a very serious impact in terms of the economy and the BRT system. But let's just finish this one and close the meeting, I think, at the study group level. If we can just have a short one after this meeting, there are proposals which I have.
Honourable members, tomorrow, on next Tuesday, is it possible to get Metro Rail ready tomorrow? That's why I requested your presence in this meeting.
Chairperson, if I maybe can just pop out for a minute or two and check with Metro Rail, whether it's possible. I'm sure there will be somebody available from the operational side at least. But if I can double check.
Honourable Adams?
Yeah, just on that. And what about Friday, Chief? Leave maybe tomorrow for Friday. Oh, sorry. Yeah, Friday. Sorry. Just in the Western Cape.
I, in actual fact, thought that he's going to suggest that he's going to object to tomorrow, because he still have to go and shop for his suit and so forth. Okay. All right. These are the 2 dates, honourable members. Oh, Mama, are you ready for tomorrow? Because I know you still there. You always do your thing 3 days in advance. Oh, okay. please.
Yeah, Chairperson, may I propose that we mandate you as the chair of this committee to take leadership of the whole process, and we'll be consulting with the relevant authorities in terms of approvals, conducting Gauteng and so on and the like, and so that we close this meeting and we start hands-on being on the, and then we'll consult that. You'll consult us with whatever outcome comes. I don't see us, all of us in this meeting, working out all these integrities. I think in principle we agree that the sooner the better. But it's pending whatever responses you get from all the stakeholders and role players towards the attainment of the objective we're to undertake as a committee.
No, that's fine then, if that is the attitude of the committee, that we go as soon as possible, of course, not losing sight of the collective spirit that we wanted to move with Gauteng legislature and so forth. Maybe just to indicate, the chair was saying that they will be able to avail people to accompany us, but ideally, next to Tuesday would have been much more better, because then all committee members would be available to move with us to those. Okay. All right, fine. Then let's look at the logistical matters and hope that we will get all those other things ready by today and inform members then accordingly. Okay, fine. That was the last official item on the agenda. And to take the opportunity, of course, I don't know whether if I should say this is the last meeting of the committee. If we are still going to Gauteng, but rather say that, no, I can't even say that officially. We will deal with those other things in Gauteng when we make our assessment of what has come out of the trip itself. Then we can determine as to whether if that will be our last meeting for the year, or not for the year, for this parliament, not even for this term, but for this parliament. We'll only be able to determine that when we come back from Gauteng. For now, let me thank you very much, members. The meeting is officially adjourned, and then the ANC Study Group has a proposal that we quickly make a reflection on one or two things as proposed by the Honorable Vivi. So, thank you very much. Once.